Coming up on Golf Today, world number one Lydia Ko is in Houston looking for her third major and the last piece of the LPGA Hall of Fame puzzle. Can she scale one last mountain at the club at Carlton Woods? And Bam Bam, Brittany Lincecum joins the show, twice a winner at the Chevron with the help of two eagles. Will her prodigious length be an advantage this week? And two more sons of Southern California joined the program, Cantlay and Shoffley. Shoffley and Cantlay, can they go back-to-back in NOLA? Pass the beignets. It's Golf Today.
Golf Today.
Big week in golf as the LPGA Tour heads to Texas for the first major of 2023. The Chevron Championship moves to a new venue this year, the club at Carlton Woods, while the PGA Tour in the Big Easy for a fun team event, the Zurich Classic of New Orleans at TPC Louisiana. This is Golf Today on a Wednesday. Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch, Golf Week Magazine. I'm calling this major the blank slate major. We don't know what to expect. Coming off the Masters, we knew the shots, Tiger, Jack, Jordan Spieth through the years, Ben Crenshaw, even Mission Hills, we knew Brittany Lincecum and those eagles. We don't really know what to expect at the club at Carlton Woods.
In any respect, because we don't even know who's coming in hot anymore. Mm. We talked a lot yesterday about the LPGA schedules kind of been hopscotching around the globe with long breaks in there as well. No one's had a chance really to build momentum. There's no mo heading into Houston at all. Now, it really feels as though the season's getting underway. Just feels kind of odd that it's getting underway with one of the biggest tournaments of the year.
I agree. A bit of a herky-jerky start to the LPGA schedule. But hearing about the rain in Texas, I tell you what, I'm starting to think about a long hitter. I'm thinking about Kupcho. I'm thinking about Lexi. I'm thinking about UCLA's own Patty Tavatanikin. I'm thinking about players who can move it and carry it, especially if the grounds are a little bit soft.
Kupcho hasn't had a top 10 since a win last summer. Lexi can't putt under pressure.
Okay, well,
Nelly Korda is the one, I think. Nelly's not going to have a problem in Houston. There's your headline for next week.
I like that. No, how about problem. Judy Rankin saying, you know, how about getting both Kordas together hot on the same weekend? Can you imagine if we've got these two, you know, daughters of professional athletic royalty chasing major championship glory in Texas? That would bring a lot of eyeballs. The television set.
It really would. And, you know, we're desperate for a rivalry in this game, so why not let it be the Korda sisters right here?
Love to see it happen.
We really would. Well, this week marks the first major of 2023 on the LPGA Tour. It's the Chevron Championship. Makes its Texas debut for the very first time after leaving Mission Hills. You can catch live first-round coverage Thursday, 11 a.m. Eastern Time, right here on Golf Channel. And here's what you need to know about the Chevron Championship. It's been played at the club at Carlton Woods in the Woodlands, Texas, for the first time after a half-century run at Mission Hills. $5.1 million purse, 132 players in the field, and the defending champion, Jennifer Kupcho.
Eamon, we got some great tee times this week. Got Lydia joining Lexi Thompson and Charlie Hull, 9:21 a.m. Eastern Time off the 10th tee. But the defending champ, Jennifer Kupcho, in the afternoon alongside the UCLA Bruin, Patty Tavatanikin, who won the Chevron back in 2021, and Jin Young Ko, who won the Chevron in 2019. By the way, Jin Young Ko will join us in the next hour. Now, back in 2016, Lydia Ko was world number one then as well. She took home the title in the Chevron. It was her second major, became the youngest player in the history of the LPGA Tour, with two majors and the youngest two-time major winner, male or female, since young Tom Morris back in 1869. I tell you what, her bio features a ton of hardware, 19 wins, including three last season. She has a couple of majors, twice player of the year, thrice winner of the race to the CME Globe, silver medal, bronze medal. It has been a very special career. And for more on the first major championship on the LPGA Tour, let's say good afternoon to Amy Rogers. Hey, Amy.
Hey there, Damon. Well, having a chance to win a major is in and of itself an incredible opportunity. But for Lydia Ko coming here this weekend, should she win, she would not only capture her third major title, but she would also earn the last 2 points that she needs to qualify for the LPGA Tour Hall of Fame. Ko picked up 3 points at the season-ending Group Tour Championship, the CME Group Tour Championship in Naples. She got a point for that win. She also got a point for earning the Rolex Player of the Year and another point for taking home the Bear Trophy trophy for the lowest scoring average of the season. So Ko comes in to this event with 25 points. She just needs 27 points in order to qualify. So if she were to get a win here, as I mentioned, she would get those final 2 points she needs. But Ko says it's something she's not even going to be thinking about this weekend.
Honestly, I just want to, you know, have a good week this week. The Hall of Fame and everything, yeah, I'm 2 points away, but, like, and I'm, like, one tournament away, technically, to being able to do that, but I could also be, like, who knows. It is definitely a big goal of mine to be in the Hall of Fame, but I don't think that's, like, my end goal or something that I'm just going to keep chasing towards, because I'm just trying to play the best golf I can. And if I put myself in contention and just keep giving myself opportunities, I feel like they're all going to come naturally. You know, I'm sure as much as I want it, the rest of the 131 other players also want the win as much as I do. So it's like, even though people, like, there might be like different things at stake for each player, I think it's meaning for every single one of them in their own different ways. I mean it'd be pretty cool to get it done in the first major of the year and, you know, be in the Hall of Fame, but, you know, that's not what's like important to me. For me, is I just want to have a good week and put myself in position, and if I have a chance at it and be the one that's holding the trophy at the end of the week, that's pretty awesome. But I don't think that's going to be like my driving force going to any of these events this year.
Now, if Ko were to win the Chevron Championship here on Sunday, it would be the second time that she's won this major, having also won back in 2016. And as I mentioned, that win would earn her those final 2 points that she would get for winning a major and get her into the LPGA Tour Hall of Fame. And in doing so, would become the youngest player ever to qualify at the age of 25. NB Park currently holds the record at the age of 27. She qualified back in 2016. Guys?
Amy Rogers setting up the week, a big week in Houston, Texas. I tell you what, I feel like we're toward the end for Lydia Ko, not the beginning, even at 25. I think this last,
you think, you know, this mountain, hastens the retirement?
I think it would. She's married. She's been on the stage for so long. I just think it's a, if it's a VAR and a LPGA win, or if it's a major championship, which is the 2 points that she needs, I just don't feel that she is going to be around that much longer.
25? You think it's
she
that
told close? Us 28's the number. I think we should enjoy the show.
Used to be 30 at one point in her mind.
It's creeping
as well
down toward the mid-20s and late 20s. And listen, I want her around. I think she's wonderful to watch. I think her short game is one of the best I've ever seen. Gosh, she's had a lot of turbulence young, you know, changing coaches, changing equipment, changing caddies, and now things have settled.
Do you think she'd already be in the Hall of Fame if she hadn't made all those coaching changes or all the caddy changes over the years?
Probably. I mean, we asked the same questions of Tiger. You know, would he have 25 majors instead of 15 majors? Would he be in a different spot than he would be now? I just feel like this is a player who doesn't need to play into her 30s. She's already told us that she probably doesn't want to do that. She seems very happy off the golf course. When you're, you know, a professional as a teenager, and you're winning on the LPGA at 14 and 15, winning back-to-back, you know, Canadian Women's Opens as she did. I just wonder, you know, will the flame burn as brightly, the fuel in the tank to continue to hit balls endlessly when you're in your 30s? I don't see it for her, personally.
Well, the mere fact that she's even in the conversation this early in life for the LPGA Tours Hall of Fame, as distinct from the World Golf Hall of Fame, is quite an accomplishment, because it really is an extraordinarily difficult hall to get into. The requirements used to be 40 wins without a major, 35 with one major, and 30 with two majors. And then in 1999, they were revised down. And over the next 20 years, only four players actually qualified for that.
Toughest hall to get into.
Which was Annika, Carrie Webb, Sayre Pack, and NB Park. And to me, a Hall of Fame that doesn't have Laura Davies in it, it has a significant credibility problem. Laura Davies has 20 wins on the LPGA Tour, including four majors, and she's not in the Hall of Fame. And I get that they have their, it's strictly a points-based system. There's no flexibility on that. 27 points required to get in. Laura Davies currently sits on 25 points. She's 59 years old. She's still out there playing in the hopes that she can get that last notch on the belt to get into the Hall of Fame. But to me, it needs more updating as well. They updated it a couple of years ago. Lorena Ochoa had by miles passed the requirements to get into the LPGA Tours Hall of Fame, was not in the Hall of Fame until the requirement was dropped that you had to have played at least 10 years on the tour, because Lorena retired after 7 or 8 years on tour and didn't meet that requirement.
Right.
So it's the flexibility or inflexibility of these requirements, to me, really diminishes the credibility of the Hall of Fame. You've got to be able to celebrate your stars, and too many of them are left on the outside looking in on
it. It is inflexible. It's a points system. I think you can't write the history of the game without Laura Davies. When you consider who she's
won
beaten.
More than 80 tournaments around
the
world.
She beat Big Mama. She's beaten. You look at her runner-ups to her. Yeah. Nancy Lopez, Pat Bradley, Pat Hurst, Kari Webb.
She's been runner-up in
Daniel,
her 50s on the LPGA
Meg Mallon.
Tour.
I mean, she beat everybody. Kari Webb has finished runner-up to Laura Davies. She's one of those game changers to me. She's one of those stars.
12 Solheim Cup teams in a row.
Yeah.
And the mere fact that she is on the outside of the LPGA Tour's Hall of Fame, to me, really just diminishes the credibility of that hall, period. And we have these arguments with every Hall of Fame. You have it with the World Golf Hall of Fame that, you know, Weisskopf couldn't get in until he died.
Right.
Peggy Kirkbell couldn't get in until after she died. There's always going to be an argument over the Hall of Fame, but wrongs ought to be righted with the Hall of Fame, and you can right it now in Laura Davies.
Just be careful, though. Don't go too far the other way where you let everybody in. I think the Hall of Fame still has to be sacrosanct. It has to be small. It has to be special. But I think Laura Davies, with her career, fits that bill. But I don't want the very good in. I want the best of the best.
You're not lowering the bar that low to get Laura Davies in.
I agree very, very much. Well, we'll continue this discussion at some point down the road. Coming up next, we've got Team Shoffley and Cantlay. Yes, they're about to join us. They're trying to go back-to-back down in NOLA. Can they focus enough, stay away from all that gumbo, make those birdies? TPC Louisiana, we'll ask them next. Back on Golf Today, how about 2009 Mission Hills? Brittany Lincecum, a.k.a. Bam Bam, fired a final round 369. How about this clutch grip hybrid in the 72nd hole, setting up an eagle to win the Chevron Championship? Used the slope to perfection. Her third win on the LPGA Tour, first major title. I mean, this is the definition of clutch. Look at that smile. You had Christy Kerr and Christy McPherson in the mix. Then 2015, same golf course, second major title. This time it was a 5-iron, I want to say. Setting up another eagle on the 72nd hole, got her into a playoff with Stacey Lewis, ended up beating Stacey with a par. Take another leap into Poppy's Pond. Yeah, you could say that that property, she had part ownership of. Turned pro back in 2004 at the age of 19. 8 LPGA victories, couple of majors, 6-time member of the United States Solheim Cup team, and has played with PGA Tour's Barbasol as well. And Bam Bam joins us on this Wednesday. It's great to see you. Only a couple starts for you in 2023. What's been the focus of your work as you prepare for this major championship?
Yeah, just trying to balance everything. Obviously, 2 kids now, and they're both out this week. They were both out in Phoenix, so it's great having them out, but just learning how to balance, you know, motherhood of 2 and, you know, trying to do time management of practicing enough and then, you know, taking them to do fun stuff. And it's definitely a different situation, but we're going to figure it out as we go.
Brittany, you played an Epson Tour event last month as part of the return from maternity leave to try to sharpen your game. Has it been any different coming back from having your second child than it was coming back from the first?
Not that I've noticed so far. Just, you know, I took maternity leave last June, so I didn't play from June until January, basically. So it's just kind of knocking off the rust. And more importantly, it's just more mental. You know, you would think after this is my 19th season, you think I'd be a veteran and wouldn't get nervous or wouldn't have these things going through my mind. But, you know, it's the same as, you know, a viewer watching us play on TV. You know, when they go out and play, like, I get equally as nervous as they do, even after 19 seasons. So just learning how to kind of channel that and take it all in and embrace it and just go out and hit the shots that I know how to hit.
Well, some of those shots you know how to hit made some history at Mission Hills over the years. You won twice there. You were also a runner-up on that golf course. How much did it pain you to learn that the major championship was moving to Texas?
Yeah, definitely. I have so many wonderful memories there, obviously winning twice and jumping in Poppy's Pond. But, you know, we're starting new traditions. You know, Chevron is elevating women's golf and just everything they've done. It's only Wednesday, and just the things that they have done already this week are pretty incredible. You know, giving past champions a Bentley. I'm driving a Bentley this week. Like, how crazy. The past champions dinner on Tuesday was just, you know, remembering, you know, Dinah Shore and all the history of this event and, you know, this beautiful golf course that we're getting to play this week. So I feel like we're going to start some new traditions. Obviously, sad we're leaving Mission Hills, but really excited to see where Chevron's going to take us in the next couple years.
Well, Brittany, a number of players trying to break through for their first major this week. When you won your first major, you said your hands were shaking before you hit that hybrid. Your heart was racing. At one point, you were singing Sugarland and Kenny Chesney songs. What do you remember?
Yeah, you nailed it. That was exactly it. And nothing has changed to this day after all these years. You know, still same. You know, I try to sing songs walking down the fairway. I try to, you know, take myself to hanging out with my daughters in happy times of trying to calm my heart rate down, taking some sips of water to kind of, you know, slow my heart rate down. But it's very similar. It's all the same. And but I mean, that was just an incredible shot, how it took the slope and ended up, you know, 5 feet or so from the hole. It was a dream come true, really.
I tell you, Brittany, one of your buddies, Julie Inkster, is probably the model for raising kids on the road. It was a different era. She sometimes drove a van around. What's it been like for you kind of balancing mamahood and the job in this modern era?
Yeah, it's a little bit different. You know, I obviously talked to Julie a bunch on giving me advice. I saw her on Tuesday at the past champions dinner. And, you know, back then they could drive to a lot more tournaments. So I felt like it was a little bit easier. Obviously, still raising two kids, trying to have such a wonderful career like she had is obviously not easy. But, you know, driving makes it a little bit easier. Now, you know, we kind of go coast to coast. The LPGA is spread out. We go international a bunch. So it's a little bit harder, but, you know, we figure it out. You know, my Emery is 3.5, so I've had all these years to kind of figure it out. My parents are great helpers, and Smucker's Daycare provides daycare for us, and it's been fantastic to have them go there, and I know they're safe, and it's the same ladies that, you know, were out here 19 years ago when I was a rookie. So it's cool to see, you know, all the kids coming through, and now my daughter's going to daycare.
Speaking of that schedule, Brittany, where it seems to jump around the globe, and it's been a little stop-start this year in particular, it's under a lot of scrutiny in terms of whether or not it allows the best players to build some kind of momentum heading into the major championship this week. Do you think it needs to be looked at in terms of giving some kind of consistency to allow players to play their best when it matters most?
Yeah, for sure. You know, the schedule has always been a tricky thing, I think, for any commissioner that has come to the LPGA. So I hopefully, you know, at some point we'll figure out how to kind of keep it more like how the men, you know, do the Florida swing and then they kind of move on. That would be great to be able to drive to more events and obviously have more events at the start of the season and not try to, you know, jam, you know, 9 weeks in a row over the summer, because obviously everybody has to take weeks off, and I feel like the same tournaments get hit every year, and I feel so bad for those same tournaments that get hit. And then obviously Hawaii last week leading up to this week. I didn't go to Hawaii just because it's really windy, it's really far. I just wanted to come here early and prepare for this major. So the schedule definitely needs some tweaking, but we have a bunch of tournaments on the schedule, which is great. We're playing for more prize money, we're on TV more, so everything is going great. We just need to rework the schedule just a little bit, and it would be great leading up to this major for sure.
Well, speaking of far, you hit the ball far. One of the highlights of my golf life was playing golf with you and Morgan Pressel at Golden Ocala. Back in the day, you were out driving me by 50. How much does this golf course, the club at Carlton Woods, fit your game?
It's great. You know, I still like to consider myself to be a long hitter, but obviously creeping up on 40 and two kids later, it's not going as far as it used to, unfortunately. But this golf course is great. It's a long hitter's golf course. There's a lot of narrow holes out there. I feel like there's water on every hole. So you really have to drive it straight. And then more importantly, the greens are pretty grainy. They're pretty sloped as well. So you have to miss it in the right spot. And there's a lot of like false fronts, and the ball could run off the green very easily. So it's definitely a game of misses this week, and missing it in the right spot and not short-siding yourself in those low areas. So, you know, you get it in the fairway, get it on the green, and hopefully you make a 30-footer here and there, and you'll be at the top of the leaderboard.
Brittany, when you get to this point of your career at 37, you've got kids at home, you've accomplished so much. How have the goals shifted, and what are your goals? Do you still think you can very much contend and win major championships right now? Are you looking towards potential Solheim Cup captaincy as well? What are the goals you have left in this game?
Ooh. I would love to win one more time, especially having my daughters out, just to show them. I mean, Emery, the three-year-old, she knows, like, mommy plays golf when I put on my clothes. She knows mommy's going to play golf, which is cool. But just to have them on 18 green holding the trophy one day would really be just, yeah, I think I could retire after that. It'd be great. But I think it's just in your blood when you've played this wonderful game for so long. You know, it seems like the stacks are against me, you know, two kids, you know, I've been out here a long time, getting older. But it's just something that goes through your veins, and just, I think I would miss competitive golf if I didn't do it. But obviously, like I said, with two kids now, we're going to play this year. You know, I have full status. We'll see how it goes and kind of evaluate at the end of the year. But definitely looking to get another win before I shut it down, for sure.
Well, Brittany, it's been so much fun following your career through all these years. Best of luck this week. Go get them. We'll speak to you soon.
The Chevron Championship is one day away, and one of the favorites is joining us, Jin Young Ko. She already owns a title here, and she's gunning for another one this week in Houston. Hour two, Golf Today is underway.
Golf Today.
It's tough to find two more disparate events in professional golf than this week. The men pair up for a rare team event at the Zurich Classic in New Orleans, while the women face the loneliest challenge of all, a major with a Chevron Championship in Houston, Texas. Welcome back into Golf Today. I'm Eamon Lynch alongside Damon Hack. Damon, we're going to talk in this hour to Jin Young Ko. She's
yes.
won this championship. She won two majors back in 2019. She's already been a winner this year. Do you think she's put the general misery of 2022 behind her, which looked so promising but delivered so little?
I hope so. And we talked to her a little bit throughout 2022 during those miserable times, in part due to the left wrist injury, which she's played through over the last year and a half.
She sounded fragile in some of those conversations.
Didn't she really? Yeah. I know. It was a little bit surprising. I mean, listen, she holds herself to such a high standard. She works so hard. But I, too, was struck by the lack of joy in the pursuit of greatness for her, and just how hard it has been and how high she holds herself in terms of the expectation level. I mean, I think all the greats do. Losing is miserable. It's just that I think in some ways they hate losing more than they love winning. You talk to the greats across sports, sometimes they feel that burden. And I hope that there are some better days ahead for her. She's a winner, as you mentioned already, this season. But when you've won majors and you've been as accomplished as she has been, anything less than success just has to taste like a bitter pill.
And as few reps as some of the top players have actually had heading into this week, Jin Young Ko is not among those who's actually lacking the reps or lacking the success. She is one of the winners on the LPGA Tour this year. Here is the list of winners in six events. Three veterans there, Jin Young Ko, Brooke Henderson and Celine Boutier, and the other three are all first-time winners. And the season's first major on the LPGA Tour gets underway tomorrow. And you can catch live first-round coverage of the Chevron Championship at 11 a.m. Eastern Time right here on Golf Channel. Now, with more on this week's first Women's Major of the Year, we welcome in Amy Rogers from More.
Thanks, Eamon. Well, to jump or not to jump, that is the question that players are weighing on whether to keep the tradition alive of the champion jumping into the water after winning the Chevron Championship. Now, it's a tradition that dates back to Amy Alcott, who was the first to make that jump back in 1988. She did it again in 1991, and then Donna Andrews was the first to carry it on in 1994. Now, while there isn't a Poppy's Pond here at the club at Carlton Woods, there is this pond that you see here behind me, and it borders the 18th green here. Now, this water is not like Poppy's Pond, the Poppy's Pond that we have come to know in recent years at Mission Hills Country Club. This pond is all natural. Now, that said, I did speak with the general manager here at the club yesterday, Steve Salzman, who tells me that the area of the water closest to the 18th green has been dredged and that they've installed some pylons just beneath the surface that are holding a net that will keep any gators going into that area. Now, that said, that doesn't mean any snakes or other little creatures might not make their way into the jump zone. So those are all the things that players are considering and, you know, pondering whether it's worth it to continue this tradition. And answer that question, would you jump?
Hopefully. We'll see. But yes, I would.
I don't know if anyone's going to jump in that lake, but we'll see.
I think it's a great tradition we have, and I think it's something that we should carry on.
I guess we'll see what comes down to it. I'm not really sure. I think there might be snakes in the water here, so might be a little interesting.
I have to think about it, but maybe.
The water is natural, so it's a little dirtier than Poppy's pond that got cleaned out before we came along, but it might be cleaner than when Amy Alcott first jumped into Poppy's pond.
I don't know. I think someone would have to pressure me. You know, it's a pond. It's not like the pool that was Poppy's pond. But if someone was like, you need to go jump in, I think if I were to win, I would do whatever.
If there's a gator in there even, like, I don't know if there are gators in Texas, but I don't like sea creatures. So it depends. It kind of depends, but I might have to keep the tradition going.
If I were to win on Sunday, I'm jumping in.
Pretty funny, some of the answers from players there. You know, it would be great to see this tradition stay alive and to jump out into the pond. They did build a dock that will allow players to jump safely. I'm told that that area of the water where they'll be able to jump out to is about 8 feet deep. But I don't know, guys. I am terrified of snakes, and just hearing some of those creatures that Grace was mentioning, I don't know. What about you guys? Would you make the jump?
I'm not jumping. No. Jeff Goldblum in Jurassic Park said nature finds a way.
Isn't it David Faherty said, if it doesn't have shoulders, I'm not going anywhere near it? No, I'm out.
Yeah, the snakes in Texas are as big as Volkswagens. Great reporting, as always, from Amy Rogers. Take a look at some of the candidates to jump into the Houston pond later this week. Fantastic tee times. We got Georgia Hall, Danielle Kang, Lydia Ko, world number one. She's off with Lexi and Charlie Hull, morning, 9:21 a.m. Eastern time, afternoon. You got Patty T, Jin Young Ko, Jennifer Kupcho, Inji Chun, Nelly Korda, and Minji Lee. And this is as good as it gets. And speaking of Lexi, go back to 2014. Saw the biggest win of her career. Shot that final round 68. Great duel with Michelle Wee. Two young stars. That's who started the final round tied for the lead with Michelle. But Lexi went bogey-free to win her first major title by three shots. Tell you what, she's played very well in major championships. Only has the one win, but look at all those runner-up finishes. Best major championship results. Four runner-up finishes. That heartbreaking third place in 2021 out in San Francisco, losing that five-shot lead in the final round. Eamon, back in 2007, I was the golf writer for the New York Times. Lexi was 12 years old. On the drive from Florida to the Carolinas at Pine Needles, she practiced her autograph on the way up. I mean, stardom was in her future, but in some ways, stardom has been very hard for this American star.
Yeah, scrutiny can be particularly cruel in this game, especially if you have a fragile part of your game, as Lexi Thompson clearly does. And looking back on that video of her in 2014 when she won, how different it all seemed. That was the same summer that Michelle Wee then went on to win the US Women's Open at Pinehurst that year. And that seemed the future of American golf. Now Michelle is retired after an injury-plagued career. And Lexi's still very much out there, only 28 years old. She's been around for so long and such a feature of this game. And, you know, she's had a tremendous career by anyone's standards. But if you'd asked Lexi back then if 11 wins and one major was a sufficient return on her talent, I'm not so sure she would have agreed with you and said it was. But what we saw there in that list of her major championship results, with that many second place finishes and 16 top tens since that victory in 2014, that's a lot of scar tissue.
It is.
And some of it's been particularly brutal. That loss of the five-stroke lead at the Olympic Club in the US Women's Open in 2021, and a lot more near misses. Besides, there's a fragility there that doesn't go away on Sunday in the big moments. You'd love to see her win another major championship, really close things out down the stretch, show the kind of solidity that she had in the earliest days of her career. But when it matters most, the belief doesn't quite seem to be there.
And that fragility is happening in the social media era, which is something she's grappled with. She's taken timeouts from social media. Sometimes she will be on social media all the time, posting workout videos and acting as a normal teenager slash 20-something. And I think that it's been hard for her. I think in some ways she's comfortable in the Solheim Cup because she has a big sister like a Christy Kerr kind of protecting her, as it were, riding shotgun with her, asking questions, a little bit more of a dominant personality than Lexi Thompson is sometimes asked to be. And I think it's been hard for her. I think the near misses have been crushing in some ways. She's talked about in recent months needing to take extra time off to do things outside of golf. You've been on the stage since you were 12 years of age, and you were bouncing around with pigtails at Pine Needles. When it's good, it's great. You're like an American sweetheart. But when you're having the near misses and the close calls, that's got to be a pretty lonely place to be.
Is Nelly Korda Lexi without the scar tissue? Has she passed Lexi in that sense of being the face in the future of American golf, which is a striking thing to say, given how young Lexi still is at only 28 years old. But as you said, she's been out there as a public figure.
It's an interesting
since the age of 12.
Yeah, it's a great question. I think, you know, these are two families from Florida. I mean, Lexi has brothers who play professional golf. Nelly has an older sister who's a six-time winner on the LPGA, and a brother in Sebi Korda who's a highly accomplished member of the ATP Tour, who was fantastic, who's won in Australia. I think that it's a different package. I just feel like in some ways Nelly has come to this kind of place of stardom in the game with a little bit more armor. I think that armor comes from the parents, you know, having two professional tennis-playing parents, Regina and her father, Peter Korda, who won a Grand Slam.
Can Lexi find that armor at this point in her career? Once it's been pierced, can the armor be kind of soldered and reinforced?
I tell you what, she's in contention so often that I do think that maybe it'll be someone else who stubs her toe down the stretch. Not all majors are won with a birdie-birdie finish. Sometimes it's just the person who hangs on, who makes the least amount of mistakes, who makes the least amount of bogeys. Sadly for Lexi, the questions that are most often asked in the major championships are, can you make that 6-7-foot putt, that 4-foot putt to save par? Can you get up and down? And sometimes, and we saw it in San Francisco, the wedge play let her down, and surely the short putts have let her down. But maybe if she continues to play, you know, her ball striking is so good, and she's so long off the tee, that I could still see a situation where someone else is the one who makes the mistake, and she's hanging around long enough to be there, the final person in the frame.
It almost makes you feel as though Lexi needs to be the person who posts a number in the clubhouse after a solid round, and then watches what happens after that. It's testament to her quality that she's in the position to feel as often as she is. But she's in that position a remarkable number of times. And she's, you know, Rory McIlroy has won two majors since Lexi Thompson won hers. And we talk so often about how Rory is so far away, so far removed from that major. Well, Lexi's even farther removed. Yeah. And she's 5 years younger than Rory McIlroy is. So there has to be a weight on her at a certain point. You'd just like to see it removed, and maybe this is the week.
Yeah, whether she's birdieing the last or that, you know, on the driving range waiting to find out what someone's going to do, that trophy would still shine brightly. How about another young person to talk about coming up? Nikolai Højgaard, he's a two-time winner on the DP World Tour, got special temporary membership on the PGA Tour for the rest of the season. He's going to stop by ahead of this week's team start down in NOLA. Got some notable teams we'll see this week down in the Big Easy. Cantlay, Shoffley. We had Homakawa on yesterday. They were a lot of fun. You got the law firm of Horsell and Burns, the Fitzpatrick duo, Siwoo Kim and Tom. It's going to be a lot of fun this week. For more from the Big Easy on how these teams came together, let's welcome in George Savarikas. Hey, George.
Hey, Damon, it's always a delicate dance on how you kind of pick your partner. What's the way you go about it? Maybe a DM slide, or did you have a bet that led to the partnership? Or some guys, they've just known each other for years since junior golf. I caught up with a few teams earlier during the Pro-Am to see what the backstory was on how they came to be partners for this year's Zurich Classic.
So it's a pretty good story. Obviously, Tom went to TCU, I went to Georgia, and we played in a little game at the end of the year for the national championship, and kind of texted him of what our little side bet for the game would be, and he was like, how about TCU wins, you play in the Zurich with me. We proceeded to win 65-7. But I like the pairing. I love playing with Tom. He's obviously a really solid player, and thought it'd be a good team, and felt like we should team up.
So if Georgia won, which happened, then what did you have to give Ole Harris?
We never even got to that point. You know, I think it's kind of like picking on your little brother or something when you know you're going to win going into that game, so we didn't even get to that. But I'm just glad, you know, Chris Kirk showed up to the players wearing a T-shirt that says 65-7 on it, a red T-shirt, and I'm glad we don't have to wear those or anything in the first tee.
Yeah, Harry DM'd me, and he's like, you know, would you want to play Zurich? And he's like, no, you know, if you say no, it's okay. Like, I'll still be your friend. But, I mean, I've played with Harry a couple of times on the PGA Tour and then obviously Walker Cup. But I just thought, you know, he's so good with everything. And out here, you know, wind's a pretty big factor. And he obviously grew up, you know, on the other side. And I just think our games match well together. We obviously are both Callaway players, so the golf ball is an easy thing. And, you know, it's fun for us, like two rookies trying to go out here and do something. It's a fun thing for us, and, you know, to represent the Korn Ferry Tour is it's special. So,
well, there's like seven Canadians to choose from. I feel like we threw a tee around and it's ended up together. No, it's been fun, you know, growing up in the same town, known each other for a long time. It's gonna be a fun week.
How long does the partnership go back?
I don't know. I mean, what, first competition maybe was World Cup 2018, yeah. I think we were talking about. But, I mean, Nick and I have known each other for so long. We lived together for 2 or 3 years while we were traveling together on the Korn Ferry Tour. So we've gotten to know each other pretty well over the years.
And you somehow tolerated each other over all that time and still want to be partners here at the Zurich.
Yeah, you know, we keep our distance out in the fairways. So, no, it's been fun.
Yeah, those guys have clearly known each other for years. Was talking with Charlie Hoffman. He and Nick Watney are partners. They've been partners every year at the Zurich Classic since it became a team competition back in 2017. Let's send it back to the studio.
All right, George, great stuff on how these teams came to be. Well, one of the big topics in the men's game over the last couple of weeks focused on the pace of play on the PGA Tour. Patrick Cantlay receiving the brunt of the criticism as of late. And today, RBC Heritage champ Matt Fitzpatrick had some choice words regarding slow play on the PGA Tour. This is what he had to say, courtesy of Sky Sports News. I think they give us way too much leeway to get around. If you're in a three ball, in my opinion, you should be around in 4 hours, 4.5, absolute maximum. It's a disgrace to get anywhere near that. You're talking 5:15, 5.5 at some venues, and it's truly appalling. The problem is, though, you know this conversation has gone on for years and years and years, and no one's ever done anything. So I feel like it's almost a waste of time talking about it every time. Now, today, Patrick Cantlay and Xander Schauffele were asked about Fitzpatrick's comments.
Guys, Matt Fitzpatrick said that the pace of play on the PGA Tour is disgraceful, to call it appalling. Do you agree with that?
I mean, I think that's the tour's job to sort of take a stance there. You know, all the things that have happened as of late have all been within the guidelines of the tour and what's supposed to happen. You know, no one's been penalized for slow play or anything of that nature. So we're all operating within the framework of what the tour gives us. And, you know, if enough people complain or if enough tour posts complain, and I think it's something the tour needs to address to either make it faster or change the time par. But, you know, without any context, it gets tricky because when you set up golf courses with 13 or 14 greens, tees in interesting positions and pins in tough spots, it's just going to take longer. You know, we're not playing like the local muni. That sort of the average Joe sort of compares our time par to. We're playing for $3.6 million, and if you're going to spend an extra minute to make sure you put yourself in the right spot, we're going to do it. That's just the nature of our game and our sport.
I mean, like I said, being on the pack's been interesting because the times that it's taken to play rounds has been pretty much the same for the last 10 or even longer years. And so trying to speed it up, you know, I'd be curious to know how they'd want to do that. I mean, I've played the last two tournaments and my group hasn't been warned at all. So we've been in position the entire time. So I don't know how you would want even the groups that I've been in to play faster when our groups are in position and can't go faster because the group in front of us is right in front of us.
Do you feel like you are a slow player, though?
Yeah, I'm definitely slower than average, have been my whole career, and I definitely take my time. And when I hit my ball on a bulkhead, I'm definitely going to take my time to make sure I make the right decision and try and get the ball back into the right spot.
Defending champs on slow play. Patrick Cantlay saying he's been slow his entire career, entire life. Xander saying, hey, these are the rules of the PGA Tour. We're playing within the rules. Cantlay saying he hasn't been put on the clock.
Yeah, well, that, you know, he's also saying that if he hits his ball on a bulkhead that he's going to take his time. The problem is Patrick Cantlay takes his time when he hits his ball in the middle of the green, when he hits his ball in the middle of the fairway. And what he's essentially saying there is, yes, I'm slow. What are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
And it's also not true when he said that he was in place the entire time, because I checked where he was. When he put it out on the 13th green at the Masters on Sunday, the group in front of him was on the 14th green. So he was a full hole behind at that point. And the rules as they're enforced at Augusta are enforced by different people than on the PGA Tour last week. The problem is they're not being enforced, period, when it comes to slow play. And, you know, we heard Xander talk about the fact where the course conditions factor into this. That's relevant to an extent. It was relevant at Augusta when you have fast greens, when you have pins cut on slopes. But the problem is these guys are slow all the time. Not everyone is slow. Not everyone needed 5+ hours to play at Augusta National if they were playing at their normal pace. They're playing at that pace because someone is out there dragging the entire field down. And if Patrick Cantlay is saying, OK, well, the group in front of him is causing him to stay in place, that they are slow, well, then who's in front of them? Ultimately, there is a problem here. And you could argue that some guys, that some fields are too large. It's too tough to get 156 guys around. We've seen that in a number of tournaments this year by simply the volume of players who are out there. You can't necessarily get them around in the daylight you have, but you certainly can't when guys like Patrick Cantlay are sitting there and saying, yeah, I'm slow, but I'm not going to do anything about it, and no one suggested that we do anything about it.
Do you remember the late, great John Paramore?
Oh, yeah.
DP World Tour official. I mean, he called it slow play on a 14-year-old at the Masters, Guang Tin Long. And I tell you what, it's tougher. Maybe the tour, the PGA Tour needs more of that, more of enforcement. But why would you change your Patrick Cantlay? You've won in the playoffs. You've won a FedEx Cup. You're making zillions. Why would you, you know, unless someone holds you to account, why would he change one single iota of his pre-shot routine and how he goes about his business unless there is a golf cart with a rule official up there and saying, Patrick, get moving.
And this culture on the PGA Tour was set by Slugger White, who's since retired and then moved on to the LIV Golf circuit. And Slugger White, on record, in a Golf Digest interview, said he would not give a stroke penalty to a player on the PGA Tour in case it ultimately cost him money and he couldn't send his kid to college. That's the kind of laughable nanny state that has existed on the PGA Tour when it comes to enforcing slow play out there. And that's what has enabled and emboldened the Patrick Cantlays of the world. And he's not alone. We keep saying this. He is by no means slow player out there in the PGA Tour. He's the most prominent over the last couple of weeks. But this is becoming, it becomes an issue every year on the PGA Tour. It's cyclical. There's always some tournament. There's always some incident, whether it's a JB Holmes or a Kevin Na or Patrick Cantlay. There's always somebody. But you're moving into the position now where we saw that video earlier, when fans start running stopwatches on players for social media engagement, you're heading into a dangerous territory there.
Well, maybe that's what it's going to take. Someone at the PGA Tour says, I don't like this look. I don't want our game to be viewed by a young generation as slow or out of touch. Major League Baseball has a pitch count or a pitch clock now, and we're seeing games finish in 2:20. 2:30. That's my youth as a baseball fan in L.A. National League, Dodger games, Giants games. They were 2 hours, 2.5. You're back on the 405 sitting in traffic. And instead, the game continued to get longer and longer in the pitch outs and throwing to first base. And it was endless, 3 hours plus. So maybe if it's aesthetic, That's why we have the anchor band. It was about the look in some cases. If the look is bad, maybe the tour takes the step. But we've been hearing this, I'm telling you, I got a short haircut, but there's some gray. I mean, we've been hearing these conversations for a long time. And we're hearing it now because we haven't talked much about PGA Tour v. LIV. You know, now we have something that's fresh to chew on.
Well, the future of this game doesn't need a shot clock. It needs an electric cattle prod out there, Damon. Speaking of the future of this game, one of the brightest young stars, European Golf, has earned special temporary membership to the PGA Tour. Nicolai Højgaard is making his first start with that status of the Zurich Classic, and he joins us from New Orleans next.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
And we're back on Golf Today. Nicolai Højgaard is a two-time winner on the DP World Tour, made his first start of the PGA Tour season at the Corrales Punta Cana Championship. What did he do? Finished solo second, one shot behind Matt Wallace, and the top 10 result got him into the Valero Texas Open San Antonio, where he earned special temporary membership with a tie for 28th. He's accepted that temporary membership for the remainder of the season, eligible for unlimited sponsor exemptions. And look at this young man's resume already. Couple of wins, 9 PGA Tour starts. You see the world ranking just 22, and that runner-up finish, the arrow pointing up for Nicolai. He joins us on this Wednesday from the Zurich Classic of New Orleans. It's great to see you. A few weeks back, you earned that special temporary membership on the PGA Tour. How did you celebrate? Did you have a nice cold one? Did you take a time to reflect on the accomplishment?
Nah, not really. We had to go straight to Texas, but I mean, we obviously celebrated a little bit, and it was a good step in the right direction, and we would have loved to be one shot better, but it was a great result that week.
Nicolai, how does this status change your playing schedule then for the rest of the year? Because obviously you're going to try to be securing your status on the PGA Tour for 2024, but you also have to have, I assume, one eye on the trying to make that Ryder Cup team in Europe during the summer as well. So how do you find that balance?
Yeah, we are trying to figure it out at the moment. It's obviously a great opportunity now to play over here, and we will get enough starts to hopefully secure the card for next season. But in mind, I still want to play a few events in Europe. Obviously, the Ryder Cup is a big goal this season. So there's a bit of a schedule to think about and sort out. But primarily, my focus is going to be here in the States. And I'm excited for it and looking forward to play over here a little bit more.
Well, Nicolai, a spot on the Ryder Cup team would mean extra time with Danish golf legend Thomas Bjorn, who will be a vice captain. He's been a captain. What have you learned by following his career?
I mean, I've spent a lot of time with Thomas now, and he's a phenomenal golfer. He's a great guy, and being around him, you learn stuff, and it's just about doing your own business, focus on your own career, and try to get better. And that's what he always keeps saying to me and my brother Rasmus. So Thomas has been a big part of him and a very important person in our career so far. And we obviously looked up to him when we were young, and it's cool now to be beside him and actually spend some time and learn from. He's been one of the best in his prime.
You played about half a dozen events over here last year, Nicolai, and I spoke to you after you finished at Bay Hill. You missed the cut that week, and you'd missed the cut the previous week at the Honda, but you told me that experience was going to make you a better golfer. Clearly it has. How did you draw from that experience of those early starts here last year?
I think, you learn. You're playing courses like the course at PGA National and Bay Hill, and you learn discipline. You don't need to chase perfection on the course. You just need to get the ball in place and play, and then you gradually try to plot yourself around. And I think that's been a big thing for me ever since Bay Hill. Bay Hill was a big week, and I thought we did a good job. But obviously on 18 we missed a cut. But learned a lot from that experience, and this season has been way different compared to what happened last year. We brought in some more consistent play and obviously made our average golf a little bit better. That's why we can we're making cuts and obviously performing somewhat decent sometimes, and that's been very important. So I'd say discipline back at Bay Hill taught me a lot.
Nicolai, I want to go back to your childhood, because if your house is anything like my house, your parents are doing everything they could to get you and your twin brother Rasmus out of the house. If golf wasn't your career, what other sports or activities might have been number one for you and Rasmus?
We both really enjoyed handball. I know it's not that big here in the States, but in Europe it's quite big. We basically played every sport there is, and there was back then. So it was everything from swimming to handball, football, table tennis, badminton, basically everything. So I definitely chased a dream in another sport, but not too sure which sport it would have been. But there's other hobbies as well outside golf. Comes from a pilot family, so obviously that's quite interesting. I really enjoy that, and maybe I pursued that career as well.
Nicolai, I'm sure the competitiveness with Rasmus drove you through much of your childhood, probably still does to this point, but it can't be easy all the time to play an elite sport with your identical twin brother, to be measured against each other all the time. Does that ever get a little bit old?
I mean, it's not easy every time. We've had our fights over the years, but our career has always been 1 year I've performed well, the next year Ras has performed well, and since we turned professional, Rasmus definitely got a faster start than I did. So I found it really tough back then, the first couple of years, and he won very fast on DP World Tour, and I had nowhere to play, so it's definitely tough, but we always draw and on the positives. We always find the positives, and we push each other every day, and if he plays well, I know I can beat him. So if somebody is performing very well and in contention, we both know we can beat her. So obviously it can be tough, but I only look at the positives. It's great to have a twin brother. It's great to have someone you can practice with every day, and he's pushing me and I'm pushing him to become better, and I think we both benefited a lot from that, and definitely will benefit in the future as well.
Well, it's working out very nicely so far. Nicolai, thanks for the time. Have a great week in New Orleans. Hope to speak to you again soon.
Thank you.